Good morning and welcome to the results conference for the third quarter 2018 for Grupo Nutresa. We have Carlos Ignacio Carriego, President of Grupo Nutresa, José Domingo Penagos, Vice President of Corporate Finance, and Santiago Escobar, Director of Corporate Finance. My name is Catherine Chacon, Director of Investor Relations. Thank you very much for being with us. After the presentation by the President and Vice President of Corporate Finance about the results for the third quarter of the year, we will start the Q&A. The questions we receive through the webcast will be read literally. Those who have connected to the conference in English, we appreciate it if you ask your questions using the chat option. For those who ask questions, thank you for indicating your name and the company you represent. I give the floor to Carlos Ignacio Gallego, President of Grupo Nutresa, to start the presentation. Good morning, welcome. To start with, I ask you to go to slide two so that we can share some interesting events during this period. First of all, with respect to corporate sustainability and reputation, I would like to tell you that for the eighth year in a row, Grupo Nutresa was included in the Sustainability Global Index by Dow Jones, and it is ratified as one of the most sustainable companies in the world, as the only one in the food sector in Colombia that is part of this index. According to results for 2018, the group stood out in different dimensions of sustainability, and we had the highest score in six of the 25 criteria evaluated, including health and nutrition, tax strategy, climate change strategy, environmental reporting, packaging, and risk related to water. We give a lot of importance to this recognition, which is, as always we've said in these conferences, corporate sustainability is associated to the possibility of creating value and survive in the long term. About reputation, in the lower part of this slide, for the fourth year in a row, Merco Empresas, in the monitor of corporate reputation, recognized Grupo Nutresa as the second Colombian company with the highest scores. For 2018, this monitor implemented a stricter and high-reaching methodology than in previous years, including six different evaluations, leaders, experts, merit evaluation, medical talent, consumption, and digital. These evaluations include the perception evaluation from 24 sources of information and include more than 51,000 surveys. Continuing on slide number four, we want to tell you the purchase 70% of Productos Naturella. As we said in the previous conference, our strategy is two fronts. One is that we've been working on a focused manner in the past, where we aim at medium and large companies in our strategic region, and a newer one, we invest in ventures to which we reach because of the capabilities we can develop together and the possibility of accelerating their growth and taking advantage of our platforms. Very much aligned with the strategy, we brought Naturella, a Colombian company, to produce and commercialize healthy, functional foods with several business lines, including spirulina, chlorophyll, curcuma, chia, and linseed. With this investment, Grupo Nutresa incorporates the company in a highly nutritional component, which is spirulina, and with this, we increase our capability in supply, distribution, marketing, and management to accelerate their business plan. This investment strengthens Nutresa's presence in a rapidly growing category, such as healthy foods, and we went to innovative products which benefit the consumer's health and nutrition. We did that by capitalizing the company with the contribution of 321,000 million pesos, which will be used to leverage their growth. Lastly, in this section, aligned with our strategic priority, which is sustainability, promoting healthy lifestyles, and our focus on health and nutrition in slides 4 and 5. The launches are focused on better options that have a positive impact on consumers' health. Under Pietrangelo, slide number 4, we have a very relevant piece of information. First, on the left-hand side, you can see that Pietrangelo, free of preservatives and added nitrates. Nitrites is a successful innovation that integrates science, technology, and allows us to offer a product that is free of rich ingredients using natural alternatives to guarantee quality, flavor, and useful life of the product. And on the same slide, the right-hand side, and on the same brand, you can see that we launched a new category of product, 100% vegetable protein, the veggie burgers and the veggie bites, looking at the consumer's needs for differentiated products, light, with a better nutritional profile and free from animal protein. This has been very well accepted in the market. And in slide number 5, we can tell you that this month, the nutrition expert Salmon launched in the market a new category of specialized nutrition. Launches a new category, gummies and soft caps with vitamins and minerals. So this is an interesting set of innovations, and we relate this to the investment because we'll see how important this has to promote our growth in the group. Let's now go to slide number 6 to talk about the sales in Colombia. During this period, we had sales for 1,446,000,000 pesos. Also, like in the two previous quarters, we have growth that have good sales, 3.6% higher. In this period, we had one less labor day or working day, and that is why this is 3.6. If you see by working day, the growth is 4.8%, and the volume per business day is 0.3%. This growth of 3.6, as you can see, has a plus 4.1 in prices and a decrease of 0.6 in volume. If we exclude the effect of the decrease in lower added value product, which is flours and soft products, the volumes would be growing at 1.2%. I'd like to make a comment about the prices. This is increase of 4.1% is more because of the changes in the product mix, because without the effect of those lower added value products, the growth in prices is only 2.1. Actually, we said in previous conference, we've had very careful management of the prices, and the increase is not been very important. We show the growth of coffees in the business of coffee, ice cream, and consumer foods, and chocolates are higher than the average, and they're explained mostly by volume. The biscuit business, if we exclude the product of lower added value products, we have 0.9%. In cold cartridges, it's practically stable, and decrease in pasta is due to the fact that the previous years we had some extraordinary sales for our lower price brand in an area close to Venezuela, which we didn't have this year. So in general, we have a very good quarter, taking into consideration the fewer business days of the period. With respect to international sales, we have a growth in our foreign currency, in local currencies. But during the quarter, we have a devaluation of the peso vis-a-vis the other currencies that, when you see those figures in dollars and Colombian pesos, they are somewhat affected. We had, as you can see, sales for $282.6 million with a growth of 0.5% in dollars and of minus 0.03%, practically stable in Colombian pesos. very significant is the chocolate growth, the results both in our platforms and in exports from Colombia. In TM Lo Que Tu, we have a 2.4% in their local currency, but because of foreign exchange effects, we have a decrease in 1.7 in dollars and 5.3% in Colombian pesos. The fiscal had a very good behavior in Central America with fewer lower sales in the U.S. during the quarter. In coffee, we have a growth in dollars sales. The volumes only grew at 4.5%. Retail foods grew in Central America, Dominican Republic, and in cold cuts we have an area where we sell in Central America, but lower exports from Colombia, which decreases 1.1% in dollars. If we go to slide number 7, you can see that we combine this growth in the South of Colombia. We have total sales for the quarter of 2,281,000,000,000 with a growth of 2.3%, and our highest growing business are chocolate, ice cream, and retail food. So in slide number 8, we'll see accumulated sales by the end of the third quarter of this year. We have then in Colombia some revenue for 4.1% growth vis-a-vis the same period last year, and we have now 4.2 billion pesos, a figure that is a result of a 2.3% growth in volume and 1.5% in prices. I said this is mainly due to the change in our mix. The biscuit and pasta have slight decreases in volume. All other businesses improve in terms of volume, and that is significant, and it has to do with a trend of a gradual recovery that we saw, that we had seen in Colombia. With respect to international sales, our revenue from overseas increased in this 9 months by 4% in dollars compared to the same period in 2017. We have $828.8 million. Expressed in Colombian pesos, it's 2.4 billion pesos with a growth of 2.1%. There's a good performance in all international operations with the exception of coffee because of the lower dynamics of exports. Those were recovered slightly in the third quarter. I wanted to add here that it's very important to look at these growths, especially considering that they are all due to changes. It's important with respect to the dynamics that are changing in the region. In slide number 9, when we combine the positive growth both in Colombia and overseas, we get to some sales for 6,609,000,000,000 with a growth of 3.4%. As you can see, all the businesses except coffee have grown, and I wanted to highlight what we said about the interesting event that 22.1% of our group sales at the end of the third quarter are coming from innovation. So this is making this group's capacity very important, where we are there to have new products and better products, but better processes, services, and business models. So this is a very, very positive outlook, as I said. If we go to slide number 10, you can see the sales by region accumulated at the end of September 2018. In Colombia, are 63.8% of the total sales. Outside of Colombia, 36.2%. And the second geography is Central America, where we have 9.4% of our sales. And the third is Chile with 8.1%. And the fourth is the U.S. with 7.5%. And this is a very important diversification that allows us to manage, as we've always said, not only a category portfolio, but also a geography portfolio. In slide number 11, we have a look about the market share, mainly in Colombia, and with the look, this is a snapshot, very similar to what we showed in the previous conference. Our shares were 59.3%, the weighted one, and the previous quarter we had 59.4%, and this represents a decrease of 0.5% vis-a-vis the previous year. In general, I would think it's a relatively stable behavior. There are adjustments in chocolate, in biscuits, in the beef Mexico, in TML look. And we find that it is a very clear message. These shares allows us to, you know, when we have to defend our profitability, we can do the price increases that we need. Now, obviously, we don't want to lose market share. We believe that these are situations that the company is managing, and as you can see, there's a possibility of recovering them over time. Like this is showing you, the message is relatively stable. There are small decreases compared to the previous year, and very similar to the previous quarter. In slide 12, I'm talking about your commodities index on the left-hand side. This is a higher or lower average, and it's the result of lower prices in commodities such as sugar, oils, pork, and coffee in international reference prices. I want to emphasize anyway that the local prices in some of these commodities doesn't necessarily follow the same trend. In several geographies, especially Colombia, the local price has been affected because of the tariffs and the price ranges that we have, but we have to mention that we have a relatively stable trend in our commodities. In the right-hand side, you can see the cost composition, the cost breakdown. We have the same, more or less the same. Packaging material is the most representative item, followed by coffee, pork, and wheat. We continue with our strategy for coverage of hedging to manage the risk due to the volatility of these commodities, and we also have a physical inventory strategy for when conditions are favorable, we increase those inventories. To continue then, I'll give the floor to Jose Domingo Penagos, who is going to analyze topics like profitability and financial statements for the company. Go ahead, Jose Domingo. Thank you. A very good morning to everyone. Let's go to slide number 13 to look at the EBITDA of the group in each business unit. We see a quarter with very good EBITDA in margin and in growth. You can see 300 billion Colombian pesos generated a 13.2 margin, a 10.2% growth. We have very good profitability for this period. You see the details of each businesses. First of all, we have these variations because an improvement in the cost. We are expanding our gross margin. When the coverage, as we said, Carlos Ignacio said, we have worked very well this year, and we increase volume. As we have an increase in volume, it has a significant impact on costs and fixed expenses, especially in the plants. And our key is the gross margin. We have a better management of all expenses, administration sales. We'll see that in the, you know, and in general, what we have is a great focus on productivity, and that is reflected in the numbers that we're presenting for the group and for almost all our business units. Talking about business units, I have some blocks. I will refer to each one of them each one of the key elements as we show them in the graph. And we start with the cold cuts. We have an EBITDA of 49,000 million pesos, 11.1%. We have an impact on profitability because of the business dynamics. It's most affected specifically during this quarter, and the raw materials. The effect of raw materials, although in this part we have better behaviors for their main items, for the information that we record in this period, we had an impact on those two raw materials, and that explains the decrease in the EBITDA in the cold cut business. Then we have the biscuits, good margin, 13.4%, 62,000 billion Colombian pesos for EBITDA. This is a very good geographically balanced business. It's 50-50 more or less. Good coverage, good management of expenses. It's in the middle area of the range. It's a very good behavior for this business. Chocolates, we have 76 billion pesos, 18.4% margin, 30% growth, very significant results in the business. We mentioned that in previous conferences, in addition to the capitalization that we have from the good coverage in the markets, the structure, the portfolio mix, the productivity has worked very well for this business unit, and the result is very significant during this period. Also, TM Look, the next business unit, 13.9% in the higher part of the range, very good growth, very good production. Even withholding the cost range, and TM Look is one of the businesses that might be most affected by sometimes against and in favor, because it has Chilean pesos, Mexican pesos. We have to go through dollar to make it to turn it into Colombian pesos, but in spite of these costs, exchange rates have very good results, and it doesn't really affect the results. I'll remind you that we have a portfolio that we applied in the previous years, have very good management of costs, also in the rest of the group as well, and this shows the results that we are looking at in these in this slide. We have 10.8 EBITDA, although the price has been going down for coffee, we also mentioned at previous conferences, and the cost of local raw materials, especially the co-products, has had an impact, but it's still grown in Colombia, and that loses the raw materials have a very significant impact on cost. It's a very significant cost of the cost of coffee. And this is reflected here. We also saw some commercial effects in exports, and the lower revenue due to exports are dollars that go directly to the EBITDA and contribute or to this impact for the business, coffee business. Then we are very much focused on remodeling our shops, and this has an impact on the OPEX, and we see the transactions and this is what we need in that business unit. So we have some things to make, challenges to make this profitable. But we think it's a very appropriate business, and we will continue with this, all the remodelings, and we can be more up to date according to the experience, especially in El Corral. But we also have our ice cream parlors in Central America and Dominican Republic. We had some significant impacts on in Central America because of the rains. When there's a lot of rain, sales go down. We have 18,000 billion pesos in ice creams, higher than the range growth, 50.6%, and the growth is very significant, more than 56%. We did some adjustments in the business a few quarters ago. The portfolio mix has changed. We have a lot of focus on productivity in the business, more in business management or expense management, and we have better performance. The weather has improved, so that helps us a lot with the results. So these are very good results for this quarter. Most focus on productivity and of the business, and this is reflected in the numbers. And then we have pasta, which have a margin of 10.3%. I would point out to the growth, significant compared to the previous year. We have significant growth. It's a double-digit growth compared to the previous quarters. Because of the impacts that might have the profits, we improved a bit in this last slide that I'm showing. You can have a better discipline in CapEx and better working conditions. We have more leverage for the EBITDA and very good behavior of all the items in the cash flow. This is a very good quarter in slide number 4. And I'd like you to know a few comments general of the general nature. We have very significant blocks and biscuits and chocolates in Temluk. And I would add to the ice cream business that gives us a community EBITDA at about 840,000 million pesos, a very good margin, 12.7%, almost in the middle of the range, and a significant growth of 5.1% for the EBITDA. Now we'll look at the P&L. These rates of growth are maintained in the operating aspects. If we manage the financial expenses, and all that gives us very good results. Not so. Some general comments. We also recognize the challenges. The challenges are coffee, and in retail foods, we have to a lot of work to do. We have a lot of details to give you during the quarter. Let's go to slide number 15, where we have the income statement for the quarter. We have very good details in the operations. The gross margin is significant. We maintain an increase in 100 basis points in the gross margin. We had a very good management of expenses, especially in sales. They only grew 1.1%. It's very highly controlled compared to previous quarters. This gives us very good operating profits, 233,000 million pesos, with very good margin, good growth, double-digit growth, 12.2% compared to the previous year. The productivity effects have been significant. We have very good performance in financial expenses due to mainly two things. We've been had some cash flow, and we've paid the debt with lower capital. We have got lower financial expenses, and then we can be able to get lower interest rates. We've captured the benefit because of the type of Grupo Nutresa's debt. It's a very variable with very very flexibility in terms of prepayment that allows us to take advantage of those changes in rates of interest. So the effect is 50-50, 50% due to the decrease in the debt and 50% because of the rates of interest. So we have some financial expenses that for the quarter decreased by almost 14,000 billion pesos and very good profits, net profits. If we had some specific effects of the period, such as the difference in rate of exchange, in this case gives us a positive effect of 4,500 million pesos and the participation of some associations such as Bimbo, for example, in some operational revenue because we had some revenue from almost 9 billion pesos. This is also some interest because of tax returns. We had made some claim before the tax administration. We have a return, and therefore that is increased our revenue during the quarter because of that tax return, our reimbursement. We have the post-operating events. We have a growth in profits of over 51% and net profits of 140,000 million pesos with a growth of 59% during the period. Actually, a very good quarter in terms of profits. That is the quarter. The statement of accumulated results is in slide number 6. I would highlight that it grew at 3.4%. I would like to point out again the gross margin. The arguments you already know that we have increased 70 base points. Our gross margin goes up to 70 base points, and management and sales expenses highly controlled, very good operating profits, 633,000 pesos. Financial expenses, taxes, and others, they're practically the same reasons. The difference in rate of exchange are very much in favor, and in taxes also. So we had some defect of some, for example, the last installment we had of from the Peruvian bonds we had at an open date, and we covered them very properly, and that gives additional 5,000 million pesos. So we had a very highly controlled cost operating situation, so we had net profit of 385,000 million pesos with a growth of 19%, and this is 5.8% of sales when in the previous quarter and in the previous year we had 5.1%. So the expansion of gross margin to the net margin we have in every financial statements of the group. And completing now with some figures, some balance sheet figures that we show in slide number 17. Slide 17 has the net debt of the group. Here, show the indicator. It's 2.34% of the net debt to be EBITDA. And at the end of 2017 and at the end of the last quarter, it's the lowest that we've had since 2015. We had because of the acquisition of El Corral, and we had an additional thing. We had some cash flow, and because of an increase in the EBITDA, and we deleveraged the group. The cost is 6.31%. It's going down significantly compared to the same period the previous year, and compared to December, which is 1.2%. Lower interest rates and the flexible repayment situation. This is the behavior. So in the capex, if we give some figures to the company for this end of the quarter, we have 132,000 million pesos. But for the purpose of projections and calculations, I would have close with what we had agreed on, which is 173,000 million pesos. It's usual that at this time we have most of this capex because of the schedules for the works, because of the times when the machinery is coming in. So this is what we have to be able to meet our commitment of deleverage the group that we have from 2.5 to 2.3 times. So we're going to be able to decrease that leverage ratio. These are the P&G, the balance sheet, and the cash. And I give you the floor to Carlos Ignacio again so he can complete the projections for the end of the 2018 and beginning of 2019. So let's go back to what we have for outlooks. We have in the business area in Colombia, we will continue to have a gradual recovery of consumption. As we said, this it's been slower than we had expected at the beginning of the year, but we see that consumption has been recovering. We are foreseeing a good end of the year in Colombia in terms of the commercial part. Outside of Colombia, we also see good dynamics. Obviously, as we said, we have the effect of the cross rate of exchange because of the volatility of the currency vis-a-vis the dollar right now, but the business dynamics are good in general. So, in general, in the summary from the commercial part, is good sales for the end of the year, this recovery would include the beginning of next year. Perhaps in Colombia, we have to wait until the bill for the financing of the tax reform, where there are several versions, and until we don't have a bill that has been really lodged in Congress, we can't project anything. The president in his campaign said about decreasing taxes for companies and increasing them for individuals, and we've mentioned some possible changes that would improve our fiscal part, but they've also mentioned some changes in added value taxes, which are usually transferred to the consumer, and the effect might be due to a lower dynamics, but we cannot anticipate these effects until we don't have an official version of what the tax reform might be. As far as the profitability, as I mentioned, there's a good outlook for the commodities. We have good coverage and physical inventory, and most importantly, we have some productivity and costs and expenses that are ongoing. They do not end this year, they continue, and will allow us to close the year 2018 within our desired EBITDA range. I'd like to say, without going into details, that the trend for the cash flows is highly positive, as Jose Domingo was saying, and that the value creation indicators are also very good. So in general, our outlook for the end of the year is good commercially. We don't think there's going to have any deterioration there. And with the profitability around the desired range. I'll give the floor to Catherine so that we can go to our question and answer session. Thank you, Carlos Ignacio. We'll start with the Q&A, and we don't have any questions through the webcast, so we will give the floor to the audio questions. Thank you for your attention. We'll start our Q&A. Anyone who has a question, please press star and then one on your phone. If you are using with a speaker, please lift your headpiece before you push the buttons. If you have any questions, push star and then one in your phone. We have Andres Soto from Santander. Good morning. Thank you, Carlos Ignacio, and everyone else for the presentation. My question is about the volumes. Very clear explanation from the driver, which is a change in the product mix mainly, in biscuits and pasta. Is this an intentional decision by the company of getting out of those businesses that have lower margins, or you lose a customer and it's not so competitive? What is that going on there? Because that would be a little pressure of the on the margin. Thank you, Andres. I'll be glad to answer. The idea, our idea is to give more value to the portfolio. That doesn't mean that we are going to be radical in getting out of some positions. What we want to do is that our presence is only where, even if it's marginal, where it adds value. And what we've seen there during the year is some volatility, because honestly, when simply you buy the kilos, but there's nothing except to use up the production capacity, that's not good. We don't want to make, abandon them, but we want to make them profitable. And that's what happened. I'd like to, now that you have your, the question that you asked refers to some products of little added value, some flour and some byproducts. I'm going to make a comment about the volumes in pasta. Remember that I mentioned that pasta The previous year we've had an areas in the border with Venezuela with the most cheapest brand of Comalico, which is, that was a specific one-time thing, happened last year, didn't happen this year, and decreases the volumes and prices go up. What happens is that there's no opportunity business we had, but we didn't increase the price. But when we sold less of the cheaper ones, the average price goes up. So there's no decision to abandon any specific product. The idea is to value the portfolio. Thank you, Carlos. And my second question is about the volatility and the rates of exchange where you operate, the Chilean pesos and the Colombian pesos. You mentioned that you're well covered in terms of inventory. Shouldn't we wait or shouldn't we expect any margin pressures vis-a-vis devaluation? But could that give us a chance to increase our prices because other competitors might not be as well covered?
Our profitability has been very good in the accumulated.
I mentioned that in Mexico and Chile. Chile, because of the size of the ATM look.
But remember the structure of our natural coverage or hedging that the group has. We have companies in dollars, and the exposed position is very, very little, $300 million for total sales. We have most of that coverage is natural because of our exports that we have in the group, and almost 35-40% of our revenue is in dollars. So although it has some volatility, hasn't been reflected, and we don't think that we can have that effect in the last quarter. If we had some devaluation, because we have some cost pressure, the exporting business would have that additional value to contribute to the EBITDA. For example, like coffee and some food from the biscuits. But we don't see any very significant question. And let me add to Andres, because you make a very sharp information. It is true that in some higher devaluation scenarios, our competitors that are based on imported products and do not have any production platforms have a more vulnerable competitive position than we who have platforms in most of our major markets in the region. So that is one, it's a very sharp comment, but both Colombia and Mexico and Chile, although they have devalued, we could say that we compare those jobs with what other countries have had. For example, Turkey, Brazil, or Argentina. We're talking some very different and smaller volatility, but your comment is extremely valid. Thank you. We have Sergio from Zericon. Please speak high, we can't hear you.
Hello, Catherine, for Carlos Ignacio from Paso Domingo. Which categories will be the most, or the ones that could take the best advantage of the recovery in costs in Colombia? Actually, when you look at the full portfolio, in each front there are opportunities, and there are different types. When you look at the per capita consumption, average consumption in Colombia, you see that they're very much below the average in developed countries. So we believe that through innovation, through developing new ways of reaching the consumers, and through deep knowledge of the buyer, of the consumer, and the client, we can advance. In some cases, the increase in those per capita consumption is a medium or long-term challenge, because we can do that
from one year to the next. Others might have shorter range effects. I'll give you just one example. Colombia is receiving a very significant immigration from people from Venezuela. Venezuela is the second largest product in, after Italy, in pasta consumption, is the second largest after Italy. At least it was. That migration should somehow change our per capita consumption of pasta in Colombia. That's a very important opportunity. But we have, in general, we see in all categories, we see opportunities. It's very clear that the price-demand curves are different per category, per channel, and per region. So capturing those opportunities must depend on our managing our marketing valuables and leverage what you know about that as we consumer, customer, client, buyer, and how to get to them and get that as desire to make it a specific opportunity and monetize it. So I think we have opportunities in every category. Thank you. And my second question is, in retail foods, if you were going to improve an area, whether increase traffic or increase the cost, what? Very sharp question. We've seen over the past several years in Nutresa that when we have challenges, we can face them successfully. Remember the transformation at TM Look, and then the transformation we've been doing in ice creams. I think that we have a retail food business where growth in sales is okay for compared to the region, and we have a challenge of improving the profitability. We've so far privileged a number of transactions. We want people to go to stores and buy, and we believe that the objective has been achieved. I think that our major challenge is via productivity, not only by mainly productivity, improve our profitability towards the desired level. So our major challenge is just not to lose customers, get people to go to other stores, but improve our profitability too. Thank you, Sergio. We have one question through the webcast. Felipe Gomez from Master Group. In these good efforts to improve profits, do you think, would you buy more raw materials to go to more of that vertical integration? What we're looking for here, as I mentioned in my first question from Andres, has to do with increasing the value and more profitable those portfolios. Our vertical integration by itself as a strategy is valid, but it is not our priority right now. Honestly, we would like to access brands in geographies with significant markets, a good economic situation. We would like to be able to offer products that already have any. Vertical integration is one option that could give us profitability. It can ensure some supply chains, as we've verified with our efforts in cold cuts, but it is not our main strategy today. It's a valid way, but I don't think it's our main strategy. This year we purchased a cold cut company in Colombia that would try to secure the supply in an area. We had some competitors that could take advantage of our position. So that strategy worked, but it was more like to ensure our supply chain. As far as possible, we want to grow in higher added value products. Of course, we're interested in developing very good relations with our suppliers and create a network that contributes value and gives us an appropriate needs and the consumer's desires. It is viable, but it's not our priority. We have another question. Would you be interested in buying producers of raw materials? That's exactly the same as my answer. I think that we work first on building long-term relationships with the suppliers and a win-win, and that will strengthen Nutresa's presence and its business model in the region. That is one option. We can never say never, but I think we have other priorities that we expect to capitalize on. Thank you. We continue with the questions from the audio, please. We have Federico Perez from Bancolombia.
Hola, Carolina.
José Domingo and Catherine. Based on the chocolate and the significant results that you had, profits and EBITDA margin, I think that those come from your coverage that you had in cocoa. What is the outlook for the end of this year and the beginning of next year? Is this sustainable with the EBITDA for chocolate? And the second question is for Carlos Ignacio. Give us a very broad view of what you're expecting from the tax reform. But it's like a counter question. I see that in September the consumer confidence was significantly affected, becoming negative. It might be related to that tax reform that could affect the family's basket. What could you say about that? What could the effects be for the end of the year? Thank you for being with us, and I'll take both questions. First, I'd like to start with chocolates. I would not attribute the good results in chocolates only to the coverage. The first thing is that from the business point of view, it's a business that has been doing very well. So I want to tell you that in the major platforms overseas, Peru, Mexico, and Central America, it's been growing double digits with very significant positions. In the past, some of these platforms helped little to the profitability, and we had times where they lowered that profit. But now we have a very good performance here outside of Colombia. And in Colombia also, as I said earlier, it's higher growth than the average. So it's a very solid business presence in that sector, even in market share. I was giving you an example of our chocolate professionally improved. We have very good revenue from, and it's been working very heavily on productivity. This is one of the pioneering businesses, for example, in the airport and production plants. It's a progress that has advanced a lot in working capital management. And we add to that, as you mentioned, raw material outlook. There we have a combination of physical inventories with the coverage, which those coverages don't include this just December 31st, 2018. We're already working full on managing our risk of commodity volatility in all businesses for 2019, and we have some percentage of the significant percentage of next year's needs covered that allows us to do well for the business. It doesn't mean that I'm promising that we're going to be staying at with those high percentages, but we see with our brand presence very strong in business, good business situation in Colombia and outside. And that is the result, or that is the consequence of this type of management. Secondly, about what you said about the project of the bill for tax reform, as I said, there are two areas. There are several measures that would improve our taxes to companies, and there's another package that would have to do with increasing the taxes for individuals. And in the middle, we have different versions that mention changes in changes to the VAT. When you look at these indicators, for example, the radar, we mentioned it earlier, this measures the expense. It is true that the expense
continues to improve, lower than what we thought we were going to have at the end of the year, but there's a positive trend. And the confidence level, let's say in September, vis-a-vis September improved, but September vis-a-vis August get worse. And we could have this interpretation that when the consumer feels that his value-added taxes change, it takes a time to see how his pocketbook is going to be affected. So we have to wait. Between Tuesday and Wednesday, they're going to present the bill for the change. So if that increases the added value, all those are consumer-focused taxes. The company doesn't pay them, and the effect could be some decrease in the consumption. We'll have to expect, we have to wait and see what the final version is. Politically, it's always been difficult to get changes to the added value tax in Colombia, and we have to wait. I did want to make a comment, and it's if we have a direct effect, the categories in Grupec Nutresa that might be affected are coffee, where a significant part of our portfolio has 5% fat, and also pasta. In the short term, when the VAT is going to change, sometimes we have the opposite effect takes place, which if people knew their VAT is going to be increased, they could have an over-demand in the short term. And that, you know, some channels try to be oversupplied to make some short-term profits because they can sell next year at a different price level. But I don't want to go into more details without knowing the final version, but the effect, the various reforms that we've had in the country, or in our history of Grupo Nutresa, those are short-term effects, and they decrease gradually, and consumption goes back to the desired levels. Let's wait for the reform that is going to be proposed, and you can be certain that we're going to be working hand-in-hand with the trade associations to give the opinions and understanding the reality of the country and its needs. So that is my response, Federico. Thank you, Carlos Ignacio. Very clear answer. Thank you very much. We have Daniel Guardiola from BPD. Good morning. I have a couple of questions. One is about price strategy, and the other one is about portfolio optimization. The first one is, how sustainable is it, your pricing that we saw in the first quarter? And I'd like to better understand the short and medium term. How do you think the price issue evolving because of better product mix and because of the price increase as well? And my second question is about portfolio reorganization. You were trying to optimize the portfolio, and I'd like to know whether you're considering that disinvesting in some categories when the products are lower for added value, and whether there is some category that you would like basically include that you don't have yet. Thank you, Daniel. Very good questions. And first, let's go back to the topic of prices, because over the past several years, Grupo Nutresa, what we've done is build some capability that has different types of tools, and that take into consideration, as I said earlier, the reality that the price demand elasticity models are combined with channels and geographies. So it's not general topics, and that what you do there is you do a plan by a scenario where you also assume, like it takes in the free market, different reactions of the market actors. So these are very complex models that we are constantly calibrating, and we have internal capabilities to do the simulations. and modify that variable as depending on the company's competitive position and our profit level. What does this mean? That when we do not increase prices, it's because we believe it is the most convenient. And even we're going to lower prices in some times when we need to, in the regions and categories where it would be appropriate. So if the trend here is not whether it's sustainable or not, it's how it depends on how other variables behave. If we see the raw materials and some outlook and some good outlooks and certain rate of exchange force certain actors to behave in a certain way, if I have some channels where our volumes will react in a favorable manner, I can change my prices. What Nutresa is not doing today is that every price have to be the same in all the channels and in all the regions. No, that is the sophistication of our information technology allows you to be granular and differentiated by region. So what I can say is that the fact that we don't move, it isn't that we're not simulating them. On the contrary, in some cases, in some categories, we're going to decrease prices because we can, and in increases our volume significantly, and in others, we might possibly increase prices. And it's a constant activity, and as I said, we have a team working on pricing constantly, but I couldn't tell you that there is a single trend for all categories and regions. Simply, it's just a very important variable that is part of the marketing strategies, and obviously it has a direct connection to profitability. With respect to portfolio optimization, I think your question is very interesting, because optimizing the portfolio starts within each business, and it has to do, first of all, with having fewer brands and more profitable. We have to decrease the number of residences and have fewer SKUs and work on the Paretos and hopefully have fewer references that make more volume. That we have a space to use this in our businesses. We have room to optimize, but obviously we have the variable that you mentioned, that when it is convenient, you might also get out of there. We did that in the past. For example, you remember we had a company called Dulce de Colombia, and we got out of that because it was not the business group in which we wanted to be. So the question is, is it possible to optimize the portfolio? Yes. First of all, you do your homework, but there's also the other alternative. And the other thing is that the businesses have to look at not only, the prices which present sales and EBITDA, we have to look at some value generation. Some might not look very strong in terms of EBITDA, but they do generate value. And what they represent is like a hook, and what they help us with, like distribution. So we don't just want to get out without getting anything better. But the idea of reviewing the portfolio is ongoing. About future designs, of course, we would like to, we're looking at for opportunities, but the one that I'd like to highlight right now is that we are very much active in everything that has to do with health and nutrition. We think that it's a reality in this sector, and it's at the same time a risk and an opportunity. We manage risks so that we can have the least impact possible, but we are also looking into the opportunity and are extremely active there. I would say that if we're interested in our M&A in health and nutrition. Thank you, Daniel. Well, Julio Namaya from the Vivienda Corredores. Thank you for your presentation. My question is for consumer goods, especially El Corral or retail foods. As you mentioned, the remodelings that you have been doing in these restaurants is hurt your margins a bit. How much, what capex are you using for that remodeling? And how long do you think it's going to be before you get some returns on that? With the capex, we don't give details per businesses. You can see that for the entire group, it's been a capex discipline that is installed. Indeed, retail foods is more intensive in capex investment than industrial businesses, but specifically we reserve that percentage. What I was mentioning in profits is the remodelings that are going to, it's a trade-off that we're going to be remodeling the shop and increasing our transactions come from there. What I can say is that the increase in transactions after the place is remodeled is double digits. It's very well received by the consumers. This new look of the locales, and I'll give you a specific number. We are very, very shy about sharing that with anybody, but that's what we expect from that business. Thank you very much. Carlos Rodriguez from Ocasio Pico. Good morning. Thank you very much for your presentation. I have two questions. The first one has to do with the net that EBITDA indicator. We have at similar levels to what it was before El Corral. My question is, what level do you want to reach, and what the M&A transaction that now that you have power? Actually, the value of that indicator has been improving significantly. As you said, we're at a similar level that we had before we acquired retail foods. That firepower, we're going to be very, very judicious in using it. As long as we do this exploration of alternatives, it's something that we're working very intensively. We're using those cash flows, as Jose Domingo mentioned, to decrease our debt. We are not going to do any transaction that is not good for the future of the organization and for the shareholders. We're looking for good partners that justify that investment. Meanwhile, we'll continue to decrease that. I'll give you another answer. From the risk rating agencies, which in a company like ours, usually can be 3 times or even higher if you have a clear deleveraging formula. What we have a very good firepower. What we have right now is a task of evaluating our targets so that our inorganic growth is good and that it would be something that improves the group, make it bigger, more profitable. We're not going to go crazy because we're going to decrease that. If it doesn't work in the short term, we're going to decreasing our leverage. So we don't want to have any unproductive cash. We're working for the benefit of all shareholders to make this a very sustainable, growing, and profitable business. Thank you. And my second question has to do with what you mentioned about the value creation indicators. Can you give us a little more detail of what those are indicators and at what levels are they and what levels would you like to reach in those? Actually, we're talking about, we have a methodology for improving cash flows, other for improving returns. It's a very balanced situation. The improvements in the EBITDA, this is the most challenging indicator because it's for the year to year. So we have improvements that we want to increase our capital turnover and the capex. And in working capital, we've had significant improvements. We got to 8.8% of
We're going to continue with that. We're looking for that flying goal of improving our cost of capital of the group. That is the idea, getting those better returns and using them to improve our capital cost in the medium term. That is our job. That's challenge. Thank you very much, José Domingo. Thank you, Carlos. Juan David Trujillo from Porvenir. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for your presentation. We saw that the effective tax rate during the quarter improved significantly. Are you working some strategy for the tax rate that you can follow in the future? Juan David, it's not a specific strategy in the quarter. We've had historically a very lower tax rate than the theoretical rate. In the last quarter, we had that because of the tax returns in the U.S. and in Colombia. But we also have a group of taxes that happens in Colombia and different areas in Central America, Chile, Peru. And we have some discounts for improductive ethics taxes that we're constantly using. But there's a structural change in our tax rate during the period that allows that that is going to change at the end of the year. We don't have that. We are going to have an effective tax rate higher than yesterday, than last year, because of what we mentioned, but it is not going to be changing significantly. I understand. Thank you. Joanna Castro from Itaú. Good morning. Thank you for looking for health and nutrition businesses. I think it's very difficult because we look at several sectors, but comparable, it's very difficult to find a company that adds volume to you now that you're so big, and in terms of multiples, that it's not going to be very crazy, because the more you go to health, we have multiples which are almost twice what you have. What do you think? Can you give us a range of what sort of transactions are we thinking about to get this idea more down to earth? Yes, thank you, Joanna, for your questions. Obviously, we cannot go into details and mention any target, because we would be signals to the competitors that might affect us. We have the two extremes. When we speak about health and nutrition, we're talking about the border. There's a border that is very difficult, or a limit between health and eating. We're talking about costs. Obviously, we have the hooks where the multiple reality are very high, but they're very high in companies that in sales are small, where you can see what you're buying is a path to growth, a gradient to growth, very high growth. So these are very difficult multiples. What we buy there is a path toward growth. On the other hand, there are lines. I'm not talking about pharma. It has a lot to do with well-being people, and there's opportunities. Obviously, the size of Nutresa, we can't be very small for the dreams that we have, but we don't want to feel too big to make challenges that want more than to buy. You want to build based on it, on your opportunities. So, you know, of course, you are right. In some cases, there's different multiples. What we're going to look for are opportunities in both areas. Brands or companies that are small that we can accelerate, that have to do with people's well-being through products and experiences, or parts of companies, brands and companies that might be very large and that are getting out, and they're putting those out in the market. An effort that we've been doing, we have examples in what we told you about Bennett, that is a construction based on internal enterprises, but with small other events such as Naturella that we've told you about, and obviously we are in that search. What advantages are there when you speak about health and nutrition as a vector for growth? It cuts across all businesses. Don't have a single vertical line. You can have that, but apply to many businesses. So these are opportunities, different opportunities. They are difficult. They are very demanding, but we're working on them. And obviously, we're not working alone. We're working there with the support by experts, with not only in mergers and acquisitions, but in all those fronts. And we expect to tell the market what we're doing as we get some results. Thank you very much. We have no further questions. Thank you for your participation. With this, we conclude the teleconference for results for the third quarter of 2018. Thank you all for your participation and your interest in Grupo Nutresa. The contact line with the investor relations line is always available to you to validate any questions. Have a nice day and happy weekend.